Hi, everybody. My name is Joe Stubby, and we're alcoholics. Thank you, God, for grace, because it's probably been working one day and time in my life. I haven't found a necessary to take a drink and take a conversation with humanity. But I want to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for a new lease on life. You know, I also want to say to that lady with 13 days, welcome home. You know, when I got here, that's what they told me. I didn't believe them. I didn't like them. I didn't want to get to know them. But I knew I had nowhere else to go. You know, and so when you get to that place where you ain't got nowhere else to go, you start changing in spite of your thinking. You know, and that's what's happened to me. I want to thank the committee for inviting me here. And really want to tell you, I feel the gratitude and the love that's in this room tonight. And I needed you badly. Because I've been out there busy doing, busy being, busy achieving, busy falling on my ass, all those things we go through throughout this process. And I just need to take the time to just drive to a lake. I live by a lot of lakes, and I haven't stopped in a while, you know, because I've been busy doing a bunch of things. And I think, you know, on this journey, we get chosen to do things. And sometimes they feel overwhelming. Sometimes you feel like a lot. Sometimes you feel like you're pulled a lot of different directions. And God just needs to take this ride over Narrows Bridge. You know, when I think of the Narrows Bridge, I think of Gig Harbor, you know, the women's prison. Because when I was coming up and I was a highly touted athlete, I used to always have to go see my sister. You know, he was in the penitentiary, and that was just one of the weekend things we would do. And to drive over here, you know, today and see the sun, and it was a little breeze, and she wasn't there. You know? She's somewhere else, but she wasn't there. You know what I'm saying? You know? But it was okay, because what I remember about that is that when I was young, my mother tried to, in spite of the accolades and the things that I was experiencing, she tried to make sure that I gave her myself too, within that family structure, and it left me for a while in the bowels of alcoholism and drug addiction. But I was able to get back to it once I finally got back here. And so it was a privilege to just come out and get all the hugs and walk to the lake and just say thank you, God. One more time, you know, because Alcoholics Anonymous has given me an incredible life. You know, I've learned some stuff that, you know, I haven't liked a lot along this way, you know, but what you've given me is an opportunity to quit dipping, dodging in your life affairs. And that's a lot. Let me know it. Man, that's a lot of stuff, and so I just say thank you. I love to see us women begin to pick up our lives. And when we say pick up our lives, we pick each other up. You know, that's kind of the deal for me. When I got here, if you weren't Maddie Johnson, Larry Bird, Isaiah Thomas, we had nothing in common. We had nothing in common because I was this jock that rolled up in here, and I was the coolest one in the building all the time. All the time. At least, you know, that ego, I forgot to tell you, it got in the room about 10 paces before I did. You know, that thing that we present to the outer world when we're just shaking on the inside. And thank God there were some people here that saw me shaking on the inside, and they knew it, and they said it. And sometimes they said it nicely, and sometimes they didn't, you know. But thank God there were people that had led the way, and so to the old timers that have gone before me, thank you. Thank you for putting up with me. You know, and I thank God for the principles of this program, too. Because the principle says, you know, all the required for ministry is desire. We ain't got like the coffee. We ain't got like each other. We ain't got like Bob that'll never sit up across the room and he talks at every damn meeting that we go to. We don't have to like any of that stuff. But what we got to remember here is that everybody has an opportunity to share their experience of hope. And if they ain't got no hope yet as a result of the 12 steps, then we got to give them some until they get them. Even if they leave, we still got to love them, you know. And I went in and out, and I'll share in a general way about my story. I'm not going to go through no blow-by-blow description because it makes me tired going all the way through it. But you know what? I'll try to qualify, and I'll try to tell you what it was like. Because that's what they told me. We talk about what it was like. We talk about what happened to begin to shift some things. And then hopefully I'll tell you more about it, what it's like today. Because they tell me if I can tell you more about what's happened today, I've had an opportunity to do some stuff here. Now, I got to tell you this, too. I've done some things sober. I wish I could have blamed on being drunk. You know. I wish I could have said, you know, I was drinking. But I wasn't drinking. You know, my friend calls it sobriety. That's what he calls it, you know. You know, I ain't drunk, but I'm drunk. You know, and so, but in those things, I've had an opportunity to get to the other side, you know. And I had a hard 4 or 5 months, because I got into some of the other behaviors stepped in, you know, and it got me really strongly, and And some depression set in, you know, and I got afraid and I don't want to go on. And I said, shit. Excuse my language, I'm working on that too. You know, I really try to not get behind here and tell you, you know, in those words, and because they told me that I needed to change some stuff, and that was one of the things I needed to change, and so I really work on it. But I'm excited just to be here, and I haven't done a lot of speaking in a while, but, you know, I had to come through some stuff. One more time, I got to see Alcoholics Anonymous in action, coming out of me, because I don't think we arrived here. You know, in Keys of the Kingdom, it says, there is not a plan that can be done and finished with. The principles contained in this program is enough to keep us striving for as long as we live. We cannot, will not, outgrow this plan. And so that's what it brought me back to, you know, for those 4 or 5 months when I was going through stuff, and I was acting crazy, and I didn't want to get out of bed, and I didn't want to go to these places they asked me to go to, and it'd be set up, and I was going, I ain't coming. You know, and somehow I get the courage to show up. You know, I wasn't in my best appearances, I wasn't feeling so good, but they finally show up here. It helped me show up because when I thought I was looking good, when I wasn't sure if I was looking good, and I just knew I didn't look good, they just said, show up, you know? And thank God for that, because we get through some stuff, you know? I'll be totally grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I come from a family of, there's 10 of us, there's 6 girls and 4 boys, and my family, I was born in Los Angeles, California. Actually, I was born in San Pedro. My parents were out fishing. My mother went into labor. You know, my dad used to tease me and tell me when I was about 5, 6, 7, you're going to be that child on the go. Little did he know that, you know, I was going to be that child that had an opportunity to travel the world to entertain hundreds of thousands of people. He had no idea that was going to happen. But when I was born, there was already 6 ahead of me. I was the 7th born, and I had spinal meningitis. So they didn't know if I was going to make it or not. And so I was in this incubator. I was this little baby. And so my mother couldn't take care of me. She was living in Jordan Downs in South Central L.A. She had 6 other kids, and she was a nurse. She couldn't nurse me because she had to go to work to feed all the rest of those kids. And so a great aunt raised me. And this lady is my mom, too. But this lady was a real spiritual woman. You know, she really disciplined me. And she had it down to a T. When I was inappropriate and doing stuff I wasn't supposed to do, she had me go pick my own switch. And I'd get a whooping up and down our back. You know, she was like, this is how we're going to do this. You know, we want you to know this is serious. Now, I've never been a bad kid. I'm mischievous. I'm mischievous today. I can get in trouble in this room. You know, I can. I know who I am. I know my inventory about the way that I try to be. And so I try to just, you know, keep this thing simple. And I don't always pass the test, you know. But, you know, she really did some really good stuff. And she raised until I was from 6 weeks to 9 years old. And the first introduction to alcohol, my great uncle used to make homemade brew. And he'd make that stuff. And what was fascinating about it, we had this big silver washtub. And by day, I would take baths in it, you know, in the morning and in the evening. But in between that day, homemade brew get made in it, you know. But I would be fascinated about, he would never do it until mom went off to go shop him, and she was really religious or in church. He'd get out there and sneak and get behind that apricot tree down there on 88th and Central in Southern California. Actually, got outside of Watts, and he'd start laughing. He'd take these drinks, and there'd be this laugh that would come out of him that would go from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet. And he was a guy that you wouldn't even think anything was funny. You wouldn't even know what he was talking about, but his laughter would make you laugh. It's all fascinated by it. And, you know, so, you know, I went in there and got me one of those big old jugs he was drinking out of one day. I was 6, 7. I don't really know how old I was. And I proceeded to drink. And, it didn't treat me the way it treated him. You know, and I kind of passed out, got really sick, and got one of them whoopings I told you just earlier that, you know. You know, so my first introduction to alcohol was not fun. Didn't stop anything. Stopped it for a long time. But, you know, they tell us, I heard a new baby say this not too long ago, and I know this is true because I've heard it before, but she just brought it to me. She says, alcohol and drugs are just the good things in my life. It's the stuff that's in between that'll send me over the edge. You know, it's the stuff that I got to continue to work on, and I had no idea back then, but my next introduction that I really remember is that my family moved to Seattle. I've had many miracles along the way, and I'm just going to try to point some out as I go. My family eventually moved to Seattle. By that time, there was 9 of it. There was 9, and I was a 10th. And my dad was a welder for Lockheed. He went to work as his brother was a foreman for Lockheed, and they moved to Seattle. That was another miracle, to get out of Stockton to L.A. and come to Seattle, Washington. But I moved into this house with this family that there was 9 other brothers and sisters. And it was like culture shock. You know, it was like, you know, half of them was it, had platforms on and big afros, and the rest of them was just young and, you know, and just running around. But I didn't fit. I didn't fit in that family, you know. My sisters were out in the streets. My brothers was running numbers. My daddy was drinking gin, 9,000, and there was fights going on. Skillets was flying and all kind of insanity. So I had for the first day there, it was like initiation, you know, like somebody passed me a joint and gave me something to drink, and I don't remember much about that except I stayed posted by the refrigerator that day. You know, I remember eating things that I don't even know what was in the sandwiches, but just tasted pretty good, you know. You know, and that's what happens, you know, that old taste bad thing. And that wasn't a good experience either because I was pretty sick the next day. And so I pretty much stayed away, you know, from, you know, drinking and using. And but I had a younger brother, and I always had to pay homage to him. He was 1 year, 3 months, and 4 days younger than me. We lived on 21st and Pine, right off of 22nd and Union, right in the area. And we go to the YMCA right there on 23rd and Olive. And when I was playing basketball, I just started picking it up because I needed something. You know, the creator always knows when we need something. And I don't remember playing before I got there. But I picked up the game, and I remember I was faster than all the boys down the court, but the ball would be somewhere back here because I hadn't quite figured it out yet, and they'd block it or take it. But my younger brother used to always pick me first. Now, younger brothers used to say, usually go, "Hey, sis, I'll be back in a minute. Wait right here." And then you wouldn't see him till dinner time, you know? But this young guy would pick me first. And so that instilled some confidence. So I began to play the game. And I remember I used to get my allowance away to stay at the park and stay at the gym and stay wherever it was. And I began to get better. The first time I knew that I wanted to be one of the best women basketball players in the world, I was in sixth grade. I was at Exxon Junior High, you know, and I began to smoke, you know, cigarettes. You know, I was a kid that would start a fire in the bathroom and go get the principal, you know, to help put it out, you know. I had problems long before I got drunk, you know. Yeah. Got to get attention somehow. It's too many brothers and sisters to get the attention of this house, so here's how, you know. And so all my teachers loved me. I was a good kid. I was about 3'7" student. And then I went on to Garfield High School. Garfield was a great program, great team. I had a lot of pressure as an eighth grader to decide on what high school I was going to go to. Well, my family members had gone to Garfield, so I decided to go there. And, you know, immediately out of the chute, I started to drink. I started to drink and started to smoke, you know, smoke weed. And I was the freshman sensation coming into the school. I was on Garfield, started leading score and went to the state tournament, and, you know, I lost in the championship game, all these things. And so all my friends were seniors, and they were drinking. They were drinking that surfy wine stuff, Manischewitz wine and MD 2020 and 151, you know. So it was a whole gamut going on, you know. And I wasn't really a fun drunk. I just would drink, pass out, and they'd have to get me home, you know. Immediately I started to have some blackouts because, you know, whatever that phenomenon of craving, whatever that thing is, I got it. That allergic type, that's who I am. And so they drive up because my father was this wild man. And if you didn't have personality, even today, you can't even hang out with him if you ain't got no sense of humor. You know, the stuff is just coming quick off the cuff, and he's jamming you up. And, you know, needless to say, he's not sober today, and sadly to say, and maybe one day, though, you know, I got to keep staying sober. And the love between us has grown, you know, and I've been able to get some acceptance about that with him. But, you know, they wouldn't walk to the door and say, "Mr. Walker, Joyce had a little bit to drink." They just laid me on the stairs and drive off, you know, because they weren't ready to deal with him. And so I begin to drink, and I drink a few times a week, but I'm excelling in this sport, and I'm doing things that girls hadn't done in our area and over the next couple of years had done around the country. You know, God gave me an exceptional talent. I got to Garfield 3'7" student, and by the time my senior year, I was a 2'9" student. And it wasn't because I was dumb. I've never been dumb. But somewhere along the way, I started cutting corners. You know, I started dipping and dodging responsibilities, and I'd do just enough to get by. You know, I'd go to class and didn't go to class. I would take the test, and I would get, you know, C+, maybe a B here, maybe a D here. I just started to cut corners. And you know, you can't see it when you're in it.
So I'm drinking and I'm smoking that weed. It's kind of hard to get algebra when you're full of some weed. It's really hard. It's hard to do algebra when you're sober, you know? You know, so I couldn't get it together, you know, and so, and my senior year, I won the state tournament. All through my high school career, you know, I'm drinking and I'm smoking weed and started doing a little cocaine. And I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, so I'm just going to tell you in general, because I really believe in the tradition. I really believe that I don't have to get into what it is that I did. If I tell you I drank, just know something followed behind it. Doesn't matter what it is, you know. But the old time has taught me that. They said, it's AA, baby. Okay? We talk about that, and then we talk about it in a general way. You know, so I really, when I'm in a meeting, I don't get into what it is that I use. I might do a little bit to qualify for the new baby in the room, but I don't have to tell you all that stuff. You hear, you know. You know, you know. You know. You might get it on different streets and different avenues. You know, I get it for, hey, I've been on Fifth Avenue, and then I've been on the park bench. I done been all the way in between. You know, I done been in Moscow. I done been in Thailand doing the same stuff that people do when they drink, you know. And so my senior year, you know, I had about 450 offers to go to any major school in the country. I'm a high school All-American. Got all these wonderful things going on in my life. But I'm drinking and I'm using. And I'm distorted, but I can't see it. You know, and I'm running on fear. And I got to tell you, on the basketball court was the safest place I've ever been in my whole life before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I could perform. You know, I also got to tell you, when I finally got to Alcoholics Anonymous, if you didn't clap for me after I shared, I went to another meeting. You know? You know? You know? And I don't mean that. I don't mean that in a bad way. But where I come from, applause means I'm okay. So I didn't know no better. I didn't know no better when I got here, you know. And I'm telling you, I was a real sick ticket when I got up in this room, you know. And so I had to learn some stuff before somebody said, hold up, you need to be clapping for people. I had people that told me, you don't care what you used to do before you got here. You're with us now. And this is how we do it. And thank God. And like I said, some of the messages didn't feel spiritual to me. I thought they were just picking on me. But they were loving me. They were giving me stuff that I couldn't absorb right then. But as I've gone down this path, I've been able to understand and decipher exactly what they meant. Because you don't see when you're in it. And you're feeling real bad and you feel like you just want to die. And you ain't got no self-esteem and you feel like a coward. You know, and you feel so shame-based that it took me a while to look you in your eyes. I used to shake your hand and look at your belt buckle. You know, it's your midsection. I just had shame. But I was always the loudest one, so how did you know? Was it so much pain? You know, and so I had to learn these things along the way. But I left Garfield, and I went to Louisiana State University. They really drink down there. You know, if I think about my journey, I just went where they just had a good time. You know, my freshman year in school, I almost flunked out, not because I'm dumb, because I just wasn't doing nothing. Somewhere along the way, I made a commitment to do better in school. I just got the C's and was able to stay eligible, and we had a great collegiate career, you know, in spite of what was going on, what I was doing, the physical damage I was doing to my mind, body, and spirit. And I don't know how the human body can just take all that stuff. And I drank. I was a girl on campus that I'd get those guys' cars, and I don't even care about them. But I'd do whatever I needed to do to get them keys. So if they needed to get what they needed, so I'd get the keys. Fair exchange, you know. We do whatever we need to do, and then I leave Baton Rouge to go to New Orleans. I'll be gone 2 and 3 days, you know, drinking down there, you know, on Bourbon Street or any other street, you know. And a few times, you know, I got known for, you know, I saw Joyce about 3 days ago. She was hanging out with me. She gave me a tea, and I ate Peter Fitz, you know. And they be waiting for me. Pretty soon, you know, drunk ain't clever. Pretty soon, they sent somebody to meet me before I got there because they knew where I was going. We're not smart. You know, we're just not smart, you know. They have to try over here on this side. No, we go to comfort zone. Misery loves company. I ain't going nowhere where they're acting like they got some sense. You know, I'm going where they're wild and everybody's talking to you top this and all these different things. And I don't know how my body withstood some of that stuff, but it did, you know. And God was looking after me in spite of me. You know, from Louisiana State, I was on gold medal teams during those 4 years, you know, junior national teams.
the world team, World University team, and also on the Women's Olympic team in 1984. You know, I've had many things go along the way. I remember distinctly in 1983, we had just beat the Russians, and we had just become the number one women's power in the world. And we had to work our butt off. We had that crazy coach named Patty at Summit, and she wasn't nice. You know? Look, and she still ain't nice. I watch her, you know, even today, but she's gotten a lot better, actually. But, you know, and so we just won this gold medal, and we worked so hard to get it. And all my teammates were jubilant and jumping all around me and excited. And all I could think about was, you know, if I had a couple of dreams, I'd just go on the team. You know, that's a sad place to be in your life when you've worked so hard and you've given up your summers to reach the highest pinnacle that you can reach. You need the dreams to see them. So the feelings begin to change and disappear from me. And then I left United States. I went over to Italy, and they drink over there too, you know. And the Italians, I love them, because they do it as soon as the clock, as soon as they wake up, they're making toast to everything, you know. And I was right at home. Ego just landed. That was a great place, you know, for egomaniac to be, you know. And I played well. We were always in the world championships. For a couple of years, I was over there and did well. But I, you know, 30 minutes from where I lived was American Army base. So I was at home, you know. They could really drink on them American Army bases. You know, so I seemed to find all that stuff, you know. And I passed out and I'd adopt a family. The guy, the girl, the kids. And I'd go, how'd I get into all this? I'd get myself in some situations that I just never, when I woke up that day, it wasn't going to be like that, you know? It just get into stuff. And I want those drinkers. If I'm drinking, I'll come to clothes and everything else, you know? I didn't decipher. I didn't say, well, this is below me, and this is where I want to. It didn't matter to me, you know? And I know I'm not unique on this journey here, you know? Look, I know that's true, you know? And, I just got into trouble. Just trouble, trouble, trouble. We go on and on and on, but I'm not, you know. And from there, I went to Germany, same script, different language. It didn't make no difference. I was drinking and getting in trouble, and I wasn't really getting in trouble because I was performing. See, sometimes when you're performing, I had pooper scoopers. Let me say that. I had many pooper scoopers along the way in my life. You know what? I'm not even blaming people. What I've learned here is that it ain't their fault. People tried to do whatever they could to give me the message. And they gave it to me. You know, but when you're running on fear and you ain't really let people in your life anyway, and you don't know how, and you're self-centered, you're self-absorbed, you're self-seeking, even in the moments when I was genuinely kind, it was really short-lived. And I just wouldn't let you, I tell you to do this, and I say, that's close enough. Come here, don't go nowhere, that's close enough. You know, people get wore out with all that drama. You know, and that's what was kind of going on. Oh, I didn't get close, too close. I'd fly in town, we'd just have a ball, and go to the next town. And I was doing stuff that I know when I had the real quiet moments, because in spite of my drinking, folks, there was a quiet moment that my spirit was killing me. But there'd just be tears, you know, of anguish, or there'd be frozen tears. It took me a long time to tell. Really quiet about what was going on. I wasn't one of those weak and hairy kind of, you know, drinkers where I'd just be boo-hooing. You know, that false bravado would kick you in. And that's just a thing, you know, when you're acting like you're okay when you're okay. And so I left there and after Germany and I was invited to try out to be one of the first women to make a breakthrough in male sports, you know. And I never really used the name of these people for a long time because I didn't think it was really important. And all the women's convention, they said, you need to tell that story. And I don't know, but I was invited to try out with this team. They were called Ambassadors of Goodwill, you know. And what happened was I was one of the first two women to make a breakthrough in male sports and play with these guys who are called the Harlem Globetrotters. And I got to travel around the world, and I got to entertain hundreds of thousands of people, but I'm drinking, you know, four or five nights a week. I'm using that other white substance that's really got the arrogance shining, you know, just out of control. And when they put it in another form, I ain't had no arrogance, I ain't had no courage, I ain't had no nothing. And you find me in a closet somewhere, you know? You would. I wasn't saying nothing. And no, you can't touch me. I'm scared of my shadow, so you know you can't touch me. And so I begin to have those experiences. And all this is going on. And this is, I joined that team in 1987. And by 1989, I was in trouble. having trouble.
It's this one white substance shut me down in a way that I've never been shut down in my life. And I think it's a gift, too, because it got me to the point of really being bottomed out. Enough alcohol couldn't bring me down. I had this stuff going on. I knew I was in trouble in there. I began to wake up with the inner shape. Never had the outer ones, but the inner one. I had dreams every day. Had to have things in there and there. I got to that place where I just was in trouble. And they sent me, I was on the road, acting crazy. You can hurt that kind of thing. You don't even know how crazy you're acting until somebody brings you to your attention. And sometimes you have gray spots. Like in the beginning when I was drinking, yeah, I drank too much and I blacked out. Well, I wish that I had some blackouts with some of the stuff that I put down. You know, I'd have gray stuff that if you told me enough, it would almost come back about, ooh, and it'd be, yikes, get that. So anyway, they sent me to London and, I had to get the gab. That much ain't really changed. What's happened over the years is I found my own truth here. That's been the difference here. I found out what my honesty is, you know, and I try to live by it. Sometimes I fall sick. Every day I lie to me somewhere. Okay? I ain't been in AA all this time and I ain't lied about something during the course of the day. I may not lie to you, but I can lie to me about things I'm gonna do, I'm gonna get done, and, you know, I guess that's just it's the humanness and who I am. You know, I've worked hard not to lie to you. You know, it took a few years, about 4 or 5 years, to start to get honest around here, too. Didn't just come because I wanted to be honest. You know, they say if you're painstaking about this phase of your development, you'll be amazed before you're halfway through. And so I had to start working on doing some stuff. And so the beginning of the end was they slam dunked me in treatment. And first treatment center I went to, I knew they had something I wanted. I wasn't willing to go to anyone to get it yet. They planted a seed. I was in Hollywood, California, down in Van Nuys, and at the end of that meeting, there was an alumni meeting. There was about 150 people at that meeting that held hands right before the 10th step. And when they said the Lord's Prayer, something got inside of me that at that time I'd never slept before in my whole life. And I knew there was still these people had something that was pretty awesome. And I was I sat in a half measure section, you know, so I'm just going to do half, and I'll do a little bit of this, I'm not doing all that, I don't need all that. And so then I had to go back out there and scout the terrain again. Because that's what we do. If we don't get in with this thing, we got to get out there and scout. You know? At least that's been my experience. So I was on the road again. And the best condition of my life, I've been in treatment. And the next year comes, the next time of the year comes. And back in London. And I'm in trouble in London this time. I'm paranoid. I'm in my hotel room. These little green men were under my bed. And I'm huddled up in the bed. And I got all this different stuff, you know, substances around me, and it wasn't enough. I was way too high. I thought I was going to die. I could feel my heart. Pretty soon, the green men left under the bed, and then they went to the peephole. I don't know how they got from under me without me seeing them at the peephole. They got to the peephole. And I was really afraid. I was really, really, really afraid. And something happened, and I just came down. I just said, I'm coming down from this. Whatever this is, and I packed my bag, and I got on the midnight, early morning flight from London Heathrow Airport and flew back to California. Now, from that day of December 89, I had been to Second Anthony, and I left the game in the Panama trunk. I left it. Alcohol had me under the psychosis, and then everything else I was using so bad, and I left the one thing that I loved the most. There was not a better female basketball player than me. I was one of about 3 or 4 at what I did. But when you're deluded, when you have this thing going on, you can't play no basketball. Who? And do what? You can't do it. And so I began to bottom out. I went back to another treatment center. And I got known in L.A. as she'll be here for a while, because back then they were still giving passes. I think they stopped giving passes because of some of the stuff I was doing. You know? I'd go after about 2 weeks. 6 weeks, 4 weeks, they say, okay, you go on a pass. I'd never come back. I'd go up over them hills and I'd be gone, you know? And I had no staying power. And what happened to me is that the team was looking for me. They tried to find me. I had friends after that first treatment center that intervened on me. These people in Southern California, they'd come about 8 or 10 of them. You want to talk about a nightmare? How about 8 or 10 of them come up in some house and trying to get high in? And that coming in, or you coming out. That's how they were 12-stepping in Southern California. They just show up, 8 or 10 of them. And they say, we ain't leaving. You coming up out of there. And you couldn't drink enough to come out of there and face it. And they come and get me a couple times. That's a 12-step call where they show up. They're drunk or sober. Didn't matter. You know, and they get me, and I just to get the clever again, and I go to another sister. So I went to three different sister centers, you know, during that span of that period of time. And this is all in a matter of few months. And then, yeah, I knew I needed this. I knew I needed a better way. I knew I wanted this. I knew I needed a better way. And so eventually, you know, they just let me. They said, you know, when you want us, call us. It's not about, you know, when anybody anywhere reaches out, I want their hand to A to be there. And so that, they gave them all 20 cards. And for that, I'm responsible. I mean, they were doing this thing. And they were just, you know, they said, we love you, but we got to let you go. And I've had many wonderful people in my life that just said, you got to give your God a good man. But she came to the state with me. And I never had any valuable relationship until I got 10 first. Yeah, my great aunt, she just loved me, excited me. She prayed for me. And what happened after I got back home, I lost a home in Hollywood, and I ended up in the one, I bought the one for her in Southern, in South Central LA. In fact, she didn't put my name on it while I had the money. She said, oh, no, this is how we going to do this. So we paid it off, and I'm grateful to her for that. Because left up to me, we wasn't paying for nothing. You know, we got to drink, you know, and do whatever else we got to do. And so I had all these crazy, and so there's a house in front, there's one in back, and cars in the back, and there's crazy people coming down the driveway. It was like insane. And one night she woke up, she said, George Walker, you know, when they call you by your full name, you're in trouble. She said to me, she said, you got to leave here. I know your name's on this. She said, mine's on it too. She said, I can't watch you do this to yourself. You can't watch this kind of pain. She said, I'm a religious woman, and I love God, and I tell God that I would give him to you if you could just sit over. But you got to leave here. And you can't take none of the earnings that you still have. You can't take them, because I'm keeping them. You can't take nothing. You're going to go to Seattle where your family is, and maybe you can get it right up there. Because I can't worry about you all night not getting no sleep and going through all this insane that's going on with you. Because you're on a death wish. And so what she did was, gave me a ticket from Southern California, Seattle, Washington. And this is the beginning of the beginning of 90. And she gave me a one-way ticket. She fixed me this big old bag of food, so she wasn't giving me no money either. You know, she said, if I give you some money, you're going to be back at my doorstop, you know, back at this house. No. I'm going to wait for you till you get on the bus, but then you're on your own. That's all this is wonderful, wonderful gift. So she sent me back here because I left here most likely to pursue. And I came back here heavily, And I probably got married for a couple, a few more months. But by April 21st, 1990, I was standing on the corner. And I reached that jumping off place. I went from being the first pick to stand on the corner of 14th and Yester. If you go from 5th Avenue to 14th and Yester, something has been drastically altered in your life, folks. Something has changed. When I was standing on the corner, I was thinking, I have to take 20 more dollars. And all but drinking and using couldn't push the pain away from me. It couldn't push it down from me. I was at that place. And I had a thought. My thought was this. You know, maybe I should commit a crime, go to prison, and play on the prison dance team. That's the bottom, folks. I don't think you need to go no lower than that. You know, world-class athlete, gold medalist, all-American, body, blah, before 14 years ago. And the cold part about, not that was a bad thought, but the cold part about 14 years ago, I couldn't even get picked up for 14 years ago. That's the worst. That's, hey, look. And here's the next stop. So the couple honeys left and came back, and I was still there. But you know what I know? I didn't have those kind of skills. I didn't have those skills. Obviously, you just wanted to hang out with me. I'd have to, you know, get you to hang out and have them. And that was just the truth. Is that what we got? You know, but the next thought came to me was, maybe those AAs were right. Maybe they were trying to tell me something. Maybe I should try again. I got to tell you, I didn't really tell this story for a couple of years because it was too damn painful to talk about this. It takes what it takes on this journey, you know.
I'm glad my friend Hoppy's been around because she was here when we got here. I mean, you know, you have people that walk with you that really know the inside truth. So I don't let me paint no picture that it was all good and I knew what I was doing when I got here. I didn't. And they knew I didn't. So they helped me. Them old timers helped me. I started opening my mouth in the beginning and one eyebrow would go up. So you know old timers checking you out. When you start talking, if one eyebrow goes up and one stays down, you know? They'd be like, you are full of it, so you come here. You know? I want you to come early and set the tables up. I want you to shake people's hands because you won't kill yourself, you know, in these rooms. They just kind of knew. You know, they had a way of deflating that ego that I didn't even know how huge it was. Because really, it wasn't just fear. It was just, I was afraid. I was afraid of everything. And so I began again. And I want to tell you how I began, because I told you about what happened. And I've intermingled a little bit about what the old man has given me. I don't care how successful in my life over years. And not like I got here, and I wasn't looking at steps. Only steps I was taking was the ones you get in the building. It was about a year that went by, and I was in a lot of pain. I had a sponsor. She didn't know no more than I did. And bless her heart, it wasn't no big deal. It was just people just coming our lives for whatever that experience is. What happened was I was in so much pain sitting down there at 27th and Cherry. But a lady came in from the solution group in Dallas, and she literally set my life in the because I began to follow her. She wasn't nice either. I don't know if you have these nice sponsors. I don't even get a nice sponsor. You know, my sponsor says, you're going to call me, Captain, you have to call me. And if you don't call me, and if you don't think you're one of us, hey, there's a bar around the corner. I'll buy you first one. And that didn't sound like no spiritual loving message to me. But she wasn't playing with me. She said, I ain't playing with you. I'm working. I work hard. I got a family to raise. And I'm tired. But if you want this thing, I'll go hand in hand with you. But I ain't doing all that. And I used to call her with drama. She said, oh, no, call your six friends with that. Don't call me. You know? She said, you got, look, yeah. She said, you got enough six friends you hanging out with. I know. Just call y'all. Just swoop it up. Do what y'all going to do. She said, but don't call me with that. She wouldn't let me call her with that, you know? And so I began to meet her, and she made me open up a book. It's how to pay, you know? And, yeah, she said, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? And then she turned the page and said, here's the story of how many of God's men and women have repented. Have repented. She said, this is the first comment that this book offers you. First one. You ain't got to do nothing. Here's the hope here. And then she made me do that triangle, the unity service, you know, repentance, mind, body, and spirit. She taught me about the things in triangle and how this thing works and how this thing has transformed so many other people's lives. And, you know, she made me get a prayer in the thing of my book. And it's called the Set-Aside Prayer. And every time we open up the book, we read the Set-Aside Prayer. God, please help me set aside everything I think I know about myself, my new step, this program, and especially my disease, and especially you, for an opportunity at a new experience and an open mind with these steps, myself, this program, my disease, and especially you. Every time we open up that book, we have to read that prayer. And she said, you know, not that you don't know something, just set aside what you know. And let's go with this. And it was just this gift, because I just bought into it. Even when I didn't like it, I just bought into it. You know, and then we went to the preface, and we talked about this thing, you know. How this is a textbook here. This ain't Robert Lutman, Daniel Steele, Jesse Collins. This is a textbook. And what's a textbook? It's to be studied. It's to transfer information. It's assuming the reader knows nothing about the information and she just embarked on. She just taught me this stuff. You know, I mean, just stuff just went inside of me. And I'd meet her every Saturday. And I had the worst car in AA, so I thought in the beginning. I had a 1972 Maverick when it all everything hit the fan. You know? And it was a six shift, and it could get stuck in gear at any given time. And I wouldn't leave the meetings early because you'd hear me. And I wouldn't come late because you'd give me too much grief. And so, you know, it was a bad car. One of those things, I got there early and so nobody could hear me and leave it, you know. But I'd have to go from Tukwila to Richmond Beach every Saturday. And somehow I'd be something. And I'd be in her living room and, we're getting this work, and she, you know, she talked about before how we're the slaves, how, you know, many thousands can have recovered. Have recovered. What we come from? Seemingly hopeless mind of pain. She just showed it to me in black and white so I could get it. I could begin to see this thing. And she broke down that Dr. Bob, you know, 4th to the 2nd, that Bill W. was the first one to know all three things.
you know, MVP brought him that he needed a spiritual solution. He needed to get that. He got from Dr. Carl Jung and the oxygen for that day. She brought to Dr. Sipworth brought to him that this is a disease, it's illness, it's allergy that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Given a definition of how to do this. And then the steps kind of came from with the oxygen, the six absolute. And then one day, just him started guiding me. Changed, took the six steps and made him into 12 steps. I mean, Phil was the first one on the earth, on the planet, to know all three. And how him and Dr. Bob in the first, you know, 100 was able to transfer this stuff. And I just learned stuff. He made me read a corny book called Dr. Bob and the Good Old Man. I thought it was the corniest damn book in town. You know? I said, this is about as boring as it gets. But you know what it taught me? It taught me the only purpose that we have here is to carry the message to the alcoholics and give suffers. That's the primary purpose of alcoholics life. Ain't about nothing else. You know, don't call me about my relationships. I ain't good at it. Don't call me about your finances. I'm working on mine. You know? You know? Don't call me. I'm not a lending institution. You know? I mean, those are things that I had to come to good. My sponsor said it to me, so I passed it on to my baby. Now, I will help, and I've learned how to help a lot along the way. But, you know, I ain't good at none of those things. Get a foundation. So when your life starts to tip, it's not turvy, and it crashes, you won't do it. Because that's all we're promised here. If we do this thing, we won't wait. And so I began to do this work, and in the doctor's opinion, I found that I was going to be a late type. Of course, I thought I was the fourth one that's often friendly, wonderful, and able, except in the sexual alcohol concern. And you know, she said, wait a minute, let's go back up and look at the manic depression. She said, let's look at the psychopath. Let's look at the one that's going on a wagon for Keith. And you know, I was all of them were me. So I stopped and honestly got honest about it. They were all me. So I didn't have to look for one. I had them all in me, and that was really good information to know, and there's a solution, you know. Talk about the fact that you, just back in the day, with my parents were expecting her baby. You didn't get to use that analogy. The fact that we got just used from a capsizing ship is not enough. It's the fact that we got a common tail ain't enough to keep us as we're now doing. The fact that I'm an alcoholic ain't enough to keep me from drinking. I'm going to have to join in harmonious and brotherly action with somebody besides my doggone sickness. It means I have to do something, you know? And it was really good to really be taught this stuff. And I talk about being taught something, because if you don't know it and you ain't taught it, you ain't got it. That's what they said to me. If you don't know it, you ain't got it. You ain't nobody taught you this thing. You can't keep it if you don't have it. And so we begin to go on and build a solution that says that there's a middle of the road solution. And about a year and a couple months, I was grabbing barbed wire without a drink. I was in so much pain here. I just couldn't face all this stuff that it started to come down on me. And I just continued to follow her and into more about alcoholism, you know, and that's the first step of the program. And you got to go through all this in this book to get to more about alcoholism. It's just the first step. My goodness. Have we gone further? And so as I was doing this work with her, she told me that more about alcoholism is a chapter that was supposed to dispel any myth that I could ever safely use. It didn't mean I couldn't drink. It meant that I could never safely use any kind of chemicals in any form. The man of 30, Bob, Fred, Jim, the Jaywalker, all those guys are just like me. And she didn't talk about insanity being after I'm drunk. Such normal people, if they drink like me, they're doing some weird stuff. But she talked about insanity being the fact that the seeds were drunk. That thing that told me, this time, I'm going to name my fear. This time, it's going to be different. This time, I'll just stop with this. So she gave me that information. Okay, insanity is not after I'm loaded. It's before I'm loaded, after I've been four for 2 weeks or a month or whenever, then my thoughts are, man, just bad this time. That's the insanity I live in. You know, that's what's inside of me, you know. And I was really good to know. And she said, at certain times, she kept the papers, maybe in the power, it helped me. There's going to come a time that if I didn't have a relationship with the God, I was going to drink. You know, and just being on with her. And I think about these wonderful things she shared, and she shared me in black and white. And I had to take a highlighter, a pen, and tap it. Every time I went to her house, I was walking all the way to stuff to do, and I had to call her every day. I'd call her every day and say, I don't know. And I always called when she wasn't home, you know.
I don't like you, I don't like this machine, so bye, click, and I'd hang up. You know what? And she would say when she finally came back, she said, you're doing good. You're doing a good job, you know? Because what she was saying to me was, just keep doing it, baby, because there's going to come a time that you're going to have to use this phone, and I ain't going to be there, and you're going to have to call some more people, and they may not be there, but by then you'll know how to maybe say, you know how to call on whatever, call you do or you don't know. And then when I went from, mobile operators and I got into, a reason I, and she says, you know, you got the power, that's your dilemma. Obviously, you need something greater than yourself. And so, you know, she took me on and took me through this. But she told me something really important for me at church. It's just a God idea. Grew up in church. And I go out and took me to church 2 or 3 times a week. And I knew about a God, but I had a relationship with him. And I was a deal maker. God, had my national anthem was, God, if you get me out of this one more time, I swear I'll never do it again. And I used it over and over and over and over again. And I had a convenient God. And I never kept my end of the bargain somehow about what I was going to do. But the only thing that didn't help me the most was, in step two, I didn't need anything but belief. I didn't need no faith. I couldn't have no faith at the stage that I was in. Step two is that I'm willing to believe that there's something. Just be willing that there's something that can help me. Don't define it. Don't know it. Maybe you know from your past. Maybe you can get through it. But all I needed to do is have some willingness to believe. And after the fact, if I do this work in its entirety, 49, I'm going to know that there's something carrying me in my life. You know, and so I just went on with the belief and went on to how it works, and it describes in detail what I need to do. And when I did that inventory, about 1 year and 6 months, my sponsor didn't let me wait either. She said, oh, no, we ain't waiting. We're getting through this. You know, because she said, how much time can you wait? You may not have 1 year to wait. You might be dead. She said, you need to get into this. So I was able to get into it, and the inventory for me was unremarkable because I'm good at telling you who you were and what you did. There ain't nothing ever happened to me that I can't, and I may not know the day, but I know the year, I know the season, and I had all these people, I had 150 people on my list of questions. I was mad at everybody. Every coach I ever played for, my teammates, because they wouldn't pass me the ball, because they know, you know, I'm the one. You know, I mean, I had all these things, I was mad at so many people, but what happened was, the first 2 columns, I could let it slide. Then the 3rd column, begin to get my attention. Because I was giving up my pocketbook, my self-esteem was drastically affected, my personal relations were affected, my sex relations were affected, my ambitions were affected. Everything was affected. And me just being to affect you. I mean, it started to just get my attention a little bit, but then, you know? And then, that wasn't even the kicker. The 4th column is when something started to change inside of me. Because all the people I had a problem blaming, I played this distinct role in the minds of the relationship. And something started to happen. And when I sat down and did that 5th step, I didn't have to tell no blow-by-blow description. Who was, in a general way, what they did, in a general way, what it affected, and more about what my part was. You know, they kept me out of trying to tell everybody else's stuff, but sticking my own stuff, so to talk about how it was. Remember, it is our lives. I didn't say this word for word, but we're changing it with the other alcohol. Not this. It's our inventory, not the other man's or the other woman's. It's just my own. You know, and she just kept redirecting me to this stuff. And then I left her, kept pretty sweet. It made no mention, but I saw it, and I didn't do this stuff in my mind. She made me write it down in black and white. So this, you do a mental inventory if you want to. All the stuff that you need to work on seems to disappear somehow. You know? And if I'm judge, jury, and executioner, I'm gonna do it in dead time. I'm not doing any time. Oh, listen. This is the But the minute I seen it in writing, I knew I wanted to try to make it right. Not all of them. When I get that 5th step, I already had an 8-step list. I didn't need to go home for an hour and write down no list. She helped me see the ones in the exact thing that I need to make amends to. She helped me see it. And so what I need to do is become willing to believe. That was the deal. Some of them were easy. I didn't make amends to people that was sorry I had found recovery. They didn't care about me being in recovery. They said, you got about 5. I didn't like you then. I don't like you now. You got about 5 minutes to get up at my face. And you know what? I run back to my sponsor. But, baby, the script is so much. You should go away. You owe it to it.
And what happened over the period of time, I started to get sick. Really started to get better. It took me 5 years to make amends to my friend grandmother. Because I just knew she was in the wrong. The time came that I could go to L.A. and make a directory, and I couldn't do what she was alive. I went to her grave. I gave my grandfather the money I'd stolen from her, and I was able to get free from it. It took that long to make a directory ministry because I was harboring myself. And I said, I haven't seen some people. Some people I didn't see. It's funny. I didn't see so many people until I had a lot of money in my pocket. I did come to get some money, and here they show up. You know, thank God they didn't all come in droves, because, you know, maybe it's back on the list. And but I was able to that first time clear up that stuff in the first 5 years. Most of them went away, they didn't see them hang on. And from there, you know, making those direct means, you know. I heard a guy say it on tape, and it's probably on one of those tapes over there. I listened to a lot of tapes over the years. I love tapes and I'll talk to you. I love to have that stuff in my ear, you know, because when I don't have it in my ear, I got me in my ear, you know, and that's still not good. It's still not good. 11 years later, it's not good. You know, and I need something to drown out me. And so what I've done is I've been able to get right, you know, and that's why I went out to get the news, for the first time. I could sit down in grocery stores and seeing people that had harmed that happened to be on my list. I need the whole grocery cart there and go past them to the next store. But it's a good person. I don't have the police killer. Usually I don't get paranoid anymore. You know, because I'm doing the right things and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And I know they probably ain't listen to me every now and then, you know, you still, you know, hurt that. But even when all your affairs are in order, you still all, you know. And it's like you just get arrogant. No, it's not going to be there. And, you know. It's just arrogance. It just comes in. And almost dare them to pull you over. You know, just trip it. I still got stuff to work on. A lot. And so, you know, in step 10, when I found here in Cleveland, step 10 has been a walking around step for me. Joe and Charlie, they're some of my heroes in this program. They do the big step that he takes. And they talk about step 10 being a walking around step. I take that with me everywhere, but. You know, and what step 10 does for me is to help me keep my chaos clean. Help me just bring it right there. I don't have to go to bed being all resentful and all on edge. And you know, sometimes I still do, but I don't have to. I can clean it up. I can stop and say, you know what, I just lied about that. Mm-hmm. And you know what, when I do that, I'm pretty free. Well, that's not how the story goes. This is really how the story goes. You know? And, you know, 20 times a day, I'm in conflict. You know, just this stuff that's rolling through my head. And thank God, you know, I used to work on this job in treatment and healing and work. It's a wonderful company. But I tell you, if I'd have went in some of them morning meetings saying what I thought, I'd have been unemployed like that. You know? If I'd have told them what I really thought about how they do things, oh, never would have kept a job and got no, you know, learned how to be a worker, a month worker. I learned that, you know? Shut your mouth. Don't say it. And you know, there were times I said it to somebody else, and it came back and had an opportunity to clean it up. See, so we learn this stuff, you know? And if you don't want to be responsible for it, don't say it. Because you know what, when it comes back, it's going to be more added to the story. That's kind of how it goes. You know? And so I use 10. 10's a good step for me. Step 11 allows me. I pray all day. Please, God, help me with this. Please, God, don't let me go in the carpool lane, because I know I'm the only one in the car. Or, you know, I'll do something, and I'll say, God, I'm going to change this. Please help me with this. I mean, I go through stuff like that. You know, there's some days where things are going good. I don't never have a 100% day of missing. You know, I just don't. I have this thing going on here. But I have days that are really good days here. Really good days, because I keep asking God to help me. Or when I have an opportunity to do the right thing, I get to do the right thing, you know? So, I'm so glad to be sober. I'm so glad I came here. I haven't done this speaking for a while, because I've been thinking of how to rest. But I'm done. You know, what happens is we go through it, and we get to the other side, and we get access more power. All that experience taught me was, don't forget who gave it to you. And don't forget who you got to give it to. And so, in closing, step 12 for me is like this. And nothing I say here is original. Everything I've shared here, I heard somebody else share, but the thing that makes it original, now it's my experience.
It's not just my theory and me just telling you. It's what I've had to experience along here. And step 12 is kind of like, you got that hurt, that lady, she's in a hole. You know, other people in life that don't get it and don't understand what it is that we're up against, just walk by and say, oh, girl, get out the hole. You're a nice girl. You got a nice family. You got everything to live for. Get out the hole. And one of us walk by, you know. And what we get an opportunity to do is, she's willing, we get down in the hole with her and lead her out into the sunlight of the spirit. If somebody let us out of the dark hole into the sunlight of the spirit. So I work with babies. You get the book. I'm not a chit-chat sponsor. We meet. And I got a little softer over here, you know. Because my own life experience allowed me to lower my expectations for me. So you start thinking, when I first got there, I said, man, what's wrong with them? They've been sober this long and acting crazy. Until I start going through it, you know. You start lowering your expectations about the old timer when you start going through stuff and seeing that. That's just humanness. That's just humanness. And guess what? They didn't drink. You know, and so we start to try to understand we are where we are here. And so I know how to lead people out. You know what I do with them? I get in the book. Because I feel alive. I feel alive. So if I'm in the book probably ain't going to lie to us. So I said, won't lie to us, but I will. But I tell people, if it ain't in the book, you know, and if I haven't been able to tell you how it's been my experience, just disregard it. You know, because God ain't done with me yet. But I know that being here with you guys let me know that this is the awesome thing that we got together. You know, at the end for me, when I was opening my mouth, it was like people would just leave. They just go, they said, oh, here she go again. You know, and so I'm glad that the program's Alcoholics Anonymous is giving me a stay with him. It's kind of what this is lasting on. You know, coming back, I do a lot of them at the Second Mass community. But probably the most awesome thing is the same team I played for, I'm now currently the head coach for the same high school I played for. That's a miracle. Mm-hmm. You know, and they really don't think I'm nice, you know. But you know what? I work for them, and I tell them, I work for you. And nobody ever gave anything easy to just do. So you got to work for it, too. And I'm learning how to be soft with them. Because last year, I was foaming at the mouth quite a bit. And I decided this year, I didn't want to be foaming at the mouth this year. This year, and so I've had to revisit some stuff. And, you know, you can be, you got to be good at something, you got to be bad at it. You know. You might have some potential with me, you know, people can see their promise, but you got to go through stuff with everybody. I'm not a really good head coach. What I am is, I keep some things on the motivator. Now I'm learning how to do the X's and O's, because when we get in that punch line and the game's going on, my heart's up in my throat too, and I got to be the calm one and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. You know, so I've had to learn that stuff, but I got a staff around me that they know this thing. So I don't have to be all and do all. I put people around me that know more than me. I'm not afraid anymore to have people around me that know more than me. You guys taught me that what I know is enough. There's some people that know more than me. So, you know, it's going to be an exciting year. It's been an exciting evening here. I needed to last more than anything when I drove back here today. Because I was just rebounding from just some self-will on the island. And guess what? Today is quiet. You can feel you, and you can hear you feel me. You know, and so, what is that? Not doing stuff that we couldn't do. Thank you so much.